Hello, hello, and welcome to the College of Creation. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to homebrew items, spells, creatures, and features for D&D. And this is a show where we make brand new homebrew every single episode based on prompts that we get from our listeners. Thank you, listeners, for all of your wonderful prompts. And this one is interesting.
Yeah.
This one was a very interesting one. We're back to making subclasses.
Mm-hmm. Back home.
Once again. This is what we like to do. I love a subclass. And this time we made paladin subclasses.
Mm-hmm.
These are very much not the typical paladins that you know and love. These are paladins with bad ideals. Paladins that devote themselves to something, something that can be interpreted as bad. And I think that was the tricky piece for me, was like, I am definitely not a moral absolutist. So the idea of like something being truly bad
is different.
To me, there are very few things there. And there are a lot more things that are like generally understood to be bad, but you can see how in the right context a villain would reasonably come to the conclusion that this is the right thing to do.
Correct.
Which is not to say that they're not villainous or whatever, but like you can see a lot of ways where the existing paladin oaths could be twisted to serve a nefarious purpose.
Sure.
Similarly, I think you can see a lot of seemingly nefarious things that someone who is otherwise fairly good could be sort of taken into and convinced that such a thing would be a good and noble cause.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit tricky for me that way.
I agree. I veered way off from what I thought I was going to do last week.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned maybe taking some inspiration from the old, like, Adam West Batman series Joker. Joker, like, super campy, evil, but, like, deliciously evil.
Yes.
Nefarious type of villain. And I started with that, and I took a hard right away from that, for better or for worse, I guess.
Hey.
If nothing else, this was an interesting experiment in trying to spearhead something that is objectively ungood, you know?
Right.
Maybe bad is not the right, that's maybe too much of a blanket term, but decidedly not heroic is what I was trying to shoot
for.
More than anything.
It's not your very cut and dry, you know,
sort
of paladin. And I think that like the things that you were talking about, this like Cesar Romero, this thing that to me calls to mind maybe the idea of like an oath of chaos, you know, that just doesn't feel very paladin-y. It feels like it would be very hard to fit it into the paladin structure with your channel divinity and your aura. Like I can see some creative possibilities coming out of that perhaps, but it is more of a stretch than certain other things. Which I think, you know, it's not hard to see where the more paladin-like level of devotion leans toward certain very negative things. I think we talked about it last time. The oath of conquest is to me very much like that's already a bad paladin. That's already something that I think is, you know. Yes, it's a paladin level of like devotion, and like it's knightly, and it is like focused around power. I also wanted to mention another thought that went through my brain was just to bring something that I had already made, because I have already made a paladin. I don't remember if we've talked about it on the show before, but I made it for a player of mine when we started playing in like a sort of underground kind of campaign.
Yeah, is this the mob paladin?
Yes.
Yeah, so we talked about a while ago.
Yeah, it's this paladin, like, it's the Oath of Whispers is what we called it, but technically the name that we started with and the name that both of us really liked, but then I wanted to make it more general, was the Oath of Omerta, which is, you know, the sort of That is, it is the law of, you know, paying back in kind. And it is this, like, you know, it's this ideology, right, that guides so much of our understanding of, like, mafia and mob media and stories and stuff like that. But that, to me, was, like, my first thought was, like, oh, that's a really cool idea for this, that, like, yeah, you're not dedicated to, like, the kingdom. You're not dedicated to, like, these good ideals. You're dedicated to, like, the seedy underbelly of society and, like, some crime boss who, like, you know, you're in the family, and so your oath is to the family.
To the family.
Right? So that's the idea of it, which I think is really dope. But also, as I started to get into it a little bit more and think about it a little bit more, I was like, well, but the guy who was playing that was not playing a, like, evil character. He wasn't, like, his character's alignment was definitely not evil. It was much more neutral. And I feel like that's the kind of thing that, like, this is the idea that I mean when I say that, like, these kinds of things aren't very cut and dry. Because you can see that, yes, from the perspective of, like, the law and order part of society, that is a bad ideal. But you can also see how, like, yeah, but, you know, you're looking out, you can spin it, you're looking out for, like, the little guy, you know, you're looking out for your people, and so that's good. That's still good, and there's still a code involved there. So it is an interesting piece, but I decided not to do that. I decided to try and go a little bit further down the darkness and badness route as much as I could, although it's still questionable. But yeah, I think that I love paladins. I love making paladins. I think paladins have a fascinating progression. It's really, really formulaic.
Your favorite class, correct?
Yes. Paladins are my favorite.
Why is that? I know that we've talked about it, and we've talked at length why the ranger is my favorite class. I don't know if we've ever actually gotten into the weeds.
Why? Oddly enough, yeah, I think it's a lot of the same reasons that ranger is your favorite. I think there's a lot of thematic material there to play with. You get a little bit of everything, right? Which is a thing that I like. Yeah. You can be a frontliner. You can be just a martial type fighter.
They are the two half casters.
You
they
can are, fit they are those classes, some casting in there, especially you can lean towards really thematic casting because you have a much more limited set of spells to choose from. So you have to get creative with how you use them. You have to get creative with how you flavor them. And you get some healing and some utility stuff going on as well. Things like Divine Sense and various other subclass features and stuff that give you some utility as well. So I think it's a lot of the same reasons. It's just that I lean towards Paladin for, I don't know, some reason that I don't lean towards Rangers. But I gotta say, I still really love Rangers. I think maybe it's probably just that they always have had more combat viability.
Yeah.
And I think that the Rangers had to fight to get to that level.
Yeah.
Paladins, you know, Paladins have been that from the jump. So,
yeah,
you know, that's probably something to do with it. But I do really like Paladins. I think their progression is so formulaic. It's really easy to homebrew a Paladin because every Paladin has basically the same markers. You've got Channel Divinity and Prepared Spells at third level. You've got an Aura Effect at seventh level. You have a defensive buff at 15th level. And then you have some sort of, like, transformative capstone. Every single one has basically the same thing.
And then zone. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really different than some other classes where, like, the progression is not as
totally
easy to see. And
time.
Like, you know, where the defensive bonuses and where the rocks and where the ribbons are aren't always the same.
Mm-hmm. Rogues are that way. Where I find it really difficult sometimes to pinpoint what I want to do with a rogue because each subclass, it seems, follows its own story. And paladins are all just like, it is overt. It is right there to see. I think I actually have more difficulty with paladins for that very reason, because my instinct is always to not follow the pattern.
Sure.
And so that kind of leaves me floating out in space with paladins, because like, where do you go? You have to be viable as a paladin. You have to make sure that the subclass is usable. You can't make something that nobody's going to want to play. But also, I'm hardwired to just not want to do what everybody else is doing, at least for the published material. So that, I guess, maybe the context in which you're creating. If you're making something for a published text, follow the rules 100%. If you're doing something like this, there's a little bit more space. There's a little bit more room to wiggle around.
Yeah, and like I say, once you kind of know the rules, it's much easier and more satisfying to break them in the cases when you want to make it make sense. So that's always delightful. But... Michael, I think we should get into it, because I know you've got a lot to go through there.
Yeah.
I certainly have some too.
Yeah, I agree. Why don't you go through your paladin? Let's see what you came up with for this week.
Great. Excellent. Like I said, I started thinking about my Oath of Whispers or Oath of Omerta paladin, mob enforcer paladin, which I think is still very cool, but I decided to try and lean into something a little bit even more doom and gloom a little bit here. So I decided to go all the way to the end. I started this idea just thinking about this paladin as an apocalypse paladin.
Okay.
Just a paladin who is super dedicated to the end of the world as we know it. It was a little hard to land the plane. There's a lot of ideas there, so I honed it in onto one specific sort of and very ubiquitous idea around the idea of apocalypse. So if you would open up your document, you will see the Oath of the Horseman. The end is nigh, and its coming shall be heralded by four pale riders: famine, pestilence, war, and death. Those who can read the signs are tasked with the noble and horrible duty of paving the way, prophesying to the masses, making ready the righteous souls for their place in the world to come, and striking down all the arrogant and foolhardy. The end comes for us all, but for some, it takes a quicker pace. Paladins who devote themselves to the Oath of the Horsemen follow these tenets. Famine. Those who have fattened themselves off of the land and its people must be taught true hunger. Pestilence. We are all to be food for the worms. Neither you nor anyone else are better than these crawling carrion beasts. War. To live is to be subject to violence. Be its just arbiter, not its victim. And death. Death is not a soldier astride his horse. He is a plowman, tilling the soil and ripping the weeds from his field so it may sprout with new life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
here we go
at level three. Yeah, I mean, this is just somebody who is like, I have seen the end of the world is coming. It is my job to make sure that this world is ready for whatever happens next.
Yeah,
whatever god or entity in your world you want to infuse this paladin with their zealotous ideals, go for it. Whether the end actually comes, not important. At level three, you get oath spells. These are aggressive, I will say. These are much more aggressive than your standard oath spells are for paladins. But of course, you get a compelled duel, Ray of Sickness at level three. I tried to theme all of these around at least one of the sort of four horsemen ideas. So compelled duel and Ray of Sickness for war and famine or pestilence. Crown of Madness, Ray of Enfeeblement. Up to ninth level, you get Bestow Curse and Spirit Shroud. At level 13, Blight and Sickening Radiance, which is a great spell, by the way.
Oh, it's so good. So good.
And 17, Anti-Life Shell and Insect Plague. Then at level 3, you also get the Feast and Famine feature. When you cast your Divine Smite, you can expend one use of your Channel Divinity to doom the creature hit by that attack. Each time you hit that creature with a weapon attack, including the triggering attack, add 1d8 to a growing pool. The first time on your turn that you fail to hit the target with a weapon attack, so if you miss or if you choose to take your turn doing something else other than attacking that creature, roll all of the d8s currently at the pool, and if the creature has fewer hit points remaining than the result of the roll plus your charisma modifier, it instantly dies, withering away to a husk.
Dang.
This is not going to happen very often, but you feast for a while, and then famine racks the land. Yeah. Yeah, that would be dope if you just keep, like, pummeling on a massive enemy and then just manage to get over the edge when it's got like 30 some hit points left. You're like, nice. At level 7, you have the Aura of Pestilence. Gnats and buzzing insects swirl around you, hindering your foe's movement. Any creature that misses you or one of your allies while in your Aura of Protection immediately takes piercing damage equal to your proficiency bonus.
Nice.
Additionally, at level 15, you get Holy Warcry. Which also might be a little bit of a beefy feature, but I think it's fun and cool. So as a bonus action, you can call out a divine command to your allies. Until the beginning of your next turn, you and all of your allies within your Aura of Protection can add your charisma modifier to your armor class against melee and ranged weapon attacks.
Beautiful.
So you can do this on a bonus action every turn. You just have to do it every turn. And it stops working at the beginning of your turn. So as long as you keep shouting out this war cry, this armor class bonus keeps hitting. As soon as you take your bonus action to do something else, you don't get it for that round and that sort of thing. But a nice little, you know, thing that just adds a little bonus action for you.
It's very like Nazgul-esque.
Yes, yes. Very much so. Very much just like keeping the war cry mm-hmm. loud so as to distract and weaken your
opponent.
Foes.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
Unnerve your opponent. And then level 20, you get the Death Rider feature. This is, you know, the full transformation capstone. You can use your action to take on the Visage of Death itself for up to 10 minutes. You can immediately summon a steed as though you had cast the Find Steed spell and additionally gain the following benefits. So even if you don't have a steed prepared, you don't have to spend a spell slot, whatever it is. You cast Find Steed, your steed immediately appears next to you. Additionally, you gain the following benefits. So your steed's movement does not provoke opportunity attacks. Your weapon attacks gain the reach property and deal an additional 1d8 necrotic damage on a hit. You and your steed are considered invisible in dim light and darkness. And any creature of your choice that starts its turn within 30 feet of you must succeed on a wisdom saving throw or become frightened of you for up to 1 minute. A creature can repeat this save at the end of its turns, and a creature that succeeds against this effect is immune to it for 24 hours.
Nice and straightforward, but really dope. I think my biggest problem with paladins is the fact that their capstone is at level 20, and so rarely do you actually get to a point in a conventional game where you can see a capstone play out. And
yeah,
this is one of the cool ones, man. I feel like a lot of them are relatively nondescript. Like it feels more like a stack of buffs than anything else. And this is
sure.
incredibly thematic all the way through, which is good. It does show that the reason why you like paladins is the narrative breadth
yeah.
that they have. You're going all the way from level 3 to level 20, which is a wide berth.
It's huge.
For storytelling. No other class gets that much space to tell a character story. So the trade-off for sometimes not reaching it is when you do reach it, it can be super sick.
I think, you know, that brings up an interesting thing that I think is really cool about paladins. This may also feed into part of the reason that I like them so much is because I think they it's one of the few classes that is written in such a way where like it rewards the same behavior as a player as it does mm-hmm. for the character itself, right? The idea that your capstone for your class and your subclass, the thing you take your oath to, comes at level 20 means that you have had to be dedicated to this class, not strayed from it, not multi-class. Like, you have had to remain dedicated to this oath in the same way that your character has to remain dedicated to their oath
wow.
to get to level 20, and then it pays off. So, like, there's a thing that's, like, it's narratively built into the mechanics of the class
mm-hmm.
that it, like, sways you away from and rewards you for sticking with the paladin throughout the full class progression. which I think is just a really cool thing that, like, it's built into the mechanics in such a seamless way. Yes, it doesn't pay off very often, unfortunately, but I think it is cool.
But when it does, it's so sweet.
It's very satisfying. So sweet. Very satisfying. Hey there, folks. Thanks for listening to the podcast. This is Dan here, just coming in just to say, hey, Mike is going and checking on his family. Isn't he a great and wonderful father? We appreciate him around here on the pod. He works so hard for the enjoyment that I myself get out of this, and I'm sure that you all appreciate it as well. So, you know, hey, if you decide to send us over an email to give us a prompt, that's going to be a collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, or if you come on over onto the Patreon, that's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod, and you want to shoot us a message or whatever, just remember to include just some nice words from Michael. You know, tell him how much you appreciate his contributions to this show. He works hard. He does the editing for the main show. He's putting in all the work. So let him know how much you appreciate him. I'm sure he would appreciate that. And hey, you don't even have to have a prompt. Just shoot Mike an email. Just tell Michael, hey, you're doing great. Strap in, folks, because this is a big episode. It's gonna be I think heavy. You know, he's gonna get really into it, I think, this time around, in a way that we don't often see from Michael. So I'm looking forward to it.
A few things about the Oath of the Horseman. I love that you didn't pick one of the four.
Mm-hmm.
I had a thought at one point to do a famine-based paladin.
Sure.
And my problem was I didn't know how to expand it out enough.
Yeah.
And this is how you do it.
You just hit all four of them. Just,
yeah, take all four. Why not? I really enjoy that each of the level markers has some type of homage to each of the four. So you truly are going through your character arc and prepare, like, each level marker helps you prepare the people around you or the world or however you want to aid in the bringing of the end of the world. You have something for that. You have a tool that's added at every level marker, and that is very cool and very smart.
Thanks.
I really like the spells. For sure are not typical paladin spells.
No.
And I think it's because all of the published paladins are built in a way that even the Oath of Conquest could skew at least neutral, right? They tried very hard not to fall into chaos or evil, sometimes maybe to the detriment of the class. Same with warlocks. We've talked about that on the other side of things, but really interesting spells. I think that it's very compelled duel is really cool. Level 15, Holy Warcry. I love a good bonus action recurring thing. One of my favorite spells in the game is Melf's Minute Meteors,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where you cast it once and then every subsequent bonus action you can launch a meteor at.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of spreading action economy, and this subclass does that really well. So I like this quite a bit.
Thanks. Quite a bit. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can see how even I could not resist putting some, like, slightly pulling neutral nobility into the description, at least, of the tenets. Like, all of the tenets to me are like, I can see that. That's reasonable. That feels actually like, maybe this guy isn't that bad.
The world, but like the villains have a reason. It's not just
teach the greedy people true hunger, and you know, don't feel like, you know, be humble. You are the same as a worm. You know,
silly bug.
You know, don't play the victim, but you know, don't do wanton violence. Do necessary violence.
What are you thinking?
Be good at violence, but in a good way. But I'd love to see your paladin. What did you make and bring this
Mine
week?
Is almost exactly the opposite diametrically. If I may, Dan, if you're listening to this within the United States of America, you hopefully are at least mildly aware of the proverbial clown car that is our federal branch of government.
Michael, we just call that gestures broadly.
Yeah. Yeah. Please survey the land. If you are not living in America and you haven't watched the international news, or if you live here and you are listening to this podcast and you're figuring this out for the first time, we are in a bit of a predicament where our federal government is by all three points controlled by a group that is equal parts brazen and stupid, to the point that it is difficult to figure out how it all happened. So I tried to, in my time this week, think about the causation of something like that, where the people at the top are the least qualified, and the people in the middle, the ones that they, by all measures, step on the backs of to maintain this astonishing level of wealth and power and misguided notion of tradition that just, you know, preaching one thing and saying everything to the contrary behind closed doors. I wanted to make a paladin that worked underneath that blanket of cruelty.
Mm.
Some type of true representation of, at the onset, this is a victim.
Mm.
That through their ignorance, through their lack of understanding of history, through their non-engagement in education and discourse, and finding some way out of their tiny little bubble, they then become perpetrators towards the end. So Dan, not to bring down the room.
No, hey, we tell stories with these games, and in many cases, maybe Paladin, as we spoke of earlier, because there's so much thematic weight and so much narrative potential within the mechanics, may just be the very best class with which to tell a story using mechanics.
I agree. So Dan, if you would open your document, I call this the Oath of Sycophancy.
Mm.
Pledge your allegiance to the idea of a perfect society.
Mm-hmm.
Paladins who adopt the Oath of Sycophancy revel in the knowledge that they can't be bested. They know that to be true because their leader tells them as much. These paladins value conformity, uniformity, hyper-violence, as well as the conceit that an emphasis on education can only bring unwanted complexity to their oath. They know not to ask questions, prepare frequent and gratuitous gifts for their leaders, and everything will be just fine. These paladins share the following tenets. Your leaders are much wiser and well-learned than you, but you're still very cool and very tough.
Mm.
Freethinkers are a threat and not nearly as masculine as you. And your oath is widely known and everyone loves it.
Mm.
Two ribbons and some spells at level 3.
Yep.
Starting with the warrior's bonus. The message of your oath is of the highest importance, and outside opinions mean nothing. You gain a bonus to all strength saves and skill checks, as well as martial weapon damage rolls. This bonus equals 5 minus your intelligence modifier. The dumber you are, the stronger you are.
Hmm.
Your oath spells. The magic of your oath ensures you always have certain spells ready. You learn the Vicious Mockery cantrip, and casting it can replace one attack made as part of the attack action.
Okay.
Also, the following spells at the standard levels. At level 3, you learn Dissonant Whispers and Hex. At 5, Silence and Suggestion. At 9, Antagonize and Incite Greed. At 13, Confusion and Shadow of Moil. And 17, Infernal Calling and Modify Memory.
That spell progression is also pretty... It's a story in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty already that warrior's bonus already is sinister. There's something deeply sinister about that.
That took me the longest to come up with. To have something that is mechanically positive for your paladin, that to everybody else from the outside looking in, they're like, why? What?
Yeah, it seems idiotic.
Yeah, but it helps you, right? The more you reduce your intelligence, the better you feel you are becoming in the eyes of what your oath says that you should be.
Indeed.
Also at level 3, you get the biggest and greatest feature. As a magic action, you can expend one use of your channel divinity to sing the praises of your oath. Your intelligence score is reduced by 2 for 1 hour. And during that time, whenever you fail an intelligence saving throw, you gain a point of heroic inspiration.
Good, good. Let's revel in our idiocracy.
Yeah. Yep. At level 7, we have the Aura of Affiliation. Any creature that enters your aura of protection must make a charisma save, which can be failed willingly. If a creature fails the save, whenever they are within your aura, they share your alignment and strictly follow the tenets of your oath for the next 24 hours. If a creature remains within your aura for at least 12 of those hours, they become a devout follower of your oath and will actively work to spread it to other creatures. On a success, the creature is immune to this effect for that same 24 hours. So this is a reproduction machine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you can convince people to stay, like you come around the bonfire, right? Make a harmless charisma save. You fail. Just hang out. Just hang out at our campsite for a couple days. We'll just tell you what it's all about. We'll pitch you the whole idea. It's not anything crazy. Then you go back out into the world and you just tell other people what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
No
mm-hmm.
harm, no foul. At level 15, we have the Brain Polish feature. You can add your warrior's bonus to attack rolls made against creatures with an intelligence score higher than yours. The bonus for both attack and damage rolls is doubled if the target creature's intelligence is higher by your proficiency bonus or more.
Mm-hmm.
So the dumber you are than the person Once you're again, fighting, the stronger you will be against them. Because you just...
refuse to see logic.
Yeah, the walls are coming up. At this point, you're just... purposefully not ingesting anything from anyone else. Additionally, at 15th level, whenever there's a creature in the same combat initiative order as you who has an intelligence equal to or lower than yours, you can grant them advantage on a single attack as a reaction. So you are demonizing intelligence and you are
raising up those who are
raising up
on exactly. the same level as you who are just as
bolstering the ranks
more.
Level 20, this is a bit of a break from the precedent, but I think it serves a similar purpose. In a number of words, so I'm interested to see what you think about this. Level 20, you have the Associate of Authority feature. You have bought into the tenets of your oath fully and completely. Your intelligence score is permanently reduced by 4 points. Whenever you roll initiative, several followers converted through your aura of affiliation are summoned within your aura of protection to aid you. The number of followers equals your warrior bonus to a maximum of 5. They are controlled by you, and they share your initiative count. All summoned followers use the following stat block. Just a really basic knight stat block. 18 hit points, AC of 12, speed of 30 feet. Notably, high strength, very low intelligence. They do have pack tactics, so the more of them that stay around you, the stronger they all are. Just a basic mace, a melee attack. And then a little bit here at the end. At the beginning of each round, the intelligence score of all summoned followers is reduced by 2. If their intelligence scores reach 0, they drop to 0 hit points. So they start with 8. You have them for 4 rounds. And then they're gone. Because they will get dumber and dumber until they just fall over.
I think it fulfills the sort of capstone thing. You know, it's doing something, you know, kind of once per combat or once per day more often than not, that gives you a significant power boost or advantage, both defensively and offensively. This just happens to be a summoning version of the same, which I think is in maybe any other context, I think I would say it's really cool. But
you can say it's cool.
I mean, it is cool in concept, but I do think, like, you know, it is representative of something much more sinister here in the way that you've written it. And I think really, more than anything, I feel like the oath spells are what really sells this as, like,
yeah.
Because there's a lot of talk within, you know, D&D spheres and within, like, the world of D&D about, you know, necromancy being the thing that is, like, looked down on because you are messing with life and death and all of this stuff. But I think there is a significant case to be made that if you were to take these things and put them in the real world, what actually is the more sinister thing? And it is
enchantment.
It is
100%.
It is charming. It is convincing people that reality is different than what they are perceiving it to be. It is, yeah, things like suggestion, things like silence, obviously, just to shut down conversation that you don't like.
Yeah.
It is, you know, inciting greed to prey on and to heighten the worst impulses in other people because you know that they are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because you know that, like, because of things that maybe you and people that you agree with and support have exploited them, they are worse off and so are much more susceptible to being sold things that seem like a good idea. Mm-hmm. Obviously, modify memory being chief among them, the most aggressive form of enchantment magic to fully take somebody's reality and substitute it with your own is heinous.
Mm-hmm.
It's way more egregious, way more sinister, it's way more threatening, it's way more dangerous. I think you have hit that on the head with this, right? You've made, I think, a subclass that truly does reveal how horrendous that sort of magic can be when placed in the hands of somebody who is willing to obviously, of course, ignore reality and ignore expertise, and is willing to be proud of ignorance in a way that is dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your aura of affiliation to get people sort of indoctrinated into a way of thinking, and to get them to also see that, like, the you know, intellectuals are the problem, willingly reduce your intelligence score. It will make you stronger if you refuse their expertise. And then you go even further than that, and you know, you're willing to exploit those people further and say, like, hey, I see you. You're also ignorant like I am. You are also unwilling to see reason. I'm going to tell you that you are doing nothing wrong. In fact, I will give you advantage on this attack roll because I see that you are strong. It's a good subclass, Michael. What do you want me to say? It's good, but it's horrendous, and I don't... I think you have really captured some reality here in a way that I don't think is, you know, it makes my skin crawl a little bit, but I know that that's the intention.
I don't want to say good, but...
Right, exactly.
The point of a lot of art is to evoke, right? Especially in areas of focused hobbyism, there is a grave problem right now within any circle, be it tabletop, be it online gaming, be it physical fitness, where young people are specifically targeted. As creators and as people who pride themselves on believing and knowing that learning is not only fun but necessary to keep up with the world and to keep up with our own autonomy, I think it is a privilege and a responsibility for people like you and I, and for so many of you that are listening to us. So sorry if we have not been overt enough with our beliefs, and then this is a shock to you and this is the last time you listen to our podcast. It is a responsibility for people like us to use our platform and use our art to create things like this now and then.
Yeah.
That are uncomfortable and that are ugly and that are incredibly real, because the reason why enchantment is so heinous is because it is the only school of magic that can feasibly be replicated in real life through tactics that are non-arcane, right? You're never going to raise a skeleton from the dead. You're never going to create a fireball with your bare hands. You're never going to do any of those things. You can't talk to gods. But what you can do is manipulate the way that somebody thinks about themselves, the way that they perceive the world, the way that they intake information. And when you have a leader who reaches out to other leaders that he is in charge of and says, oh, I can't believe the thing that I saw on this news station isn't true. I almost sent a massive force of power out to a place because I saw it on the television and I was seeing firebombs going off in the capital of your state. That's crazy that didn't actually happen. That's the point at which all sane people in all circles need to begin making things like this.
Yes. I couldn't agree more, except for your point about us not being able to do certain things in this world, because I'm pretty sure sending is just cell phones.
That, well, yeah, I guess that's
I'm just trying to lighten the mood here, gang. just trying to pull us out of the... No, you're absolutely right, because like I said, we're telling stories, and stories need conflict, they need struggle, they need ebbs and flows and times when things feel dire and hard, and they need to be able to represent those things fully and truly, and represent them in a way that, even in a fantasy game, like, is honest about the things that you're seeing. And you got to do that in the stories you tell. Not that there's not room for burger subclasses too. That's also valid and good. Joy is important and beautiful.
It is. Joy is very important.
But we've got to be able to be honest about it in our art. We've got to be able to be honest about it in our lives. And so thanks, Michael, for this very effective, if not good, very affecting and thought-provoking subclass here that I hope I will never use.
I hope if anyone that listens to this ever uses this, please make it an NPC.
Yeah, you got to make this a villain. This
absolutely needs to be a villain. If anyone ever does use it for that, please let me know how it went, because the mechanics are so backwards and so ridiculous, and it makes me think back to where we were in like 2015, 2016. Half the world was laughing because it was funny. There are bits in this subclass that are funny. The tenets are funny.
Yes.
Right? You're very cool. You're a tough guy. You're the coolest boy in school. And don't you ever forget it. The intellectuals, they're not nearly as manly as you, dude. You could take them. Your dad could beat up their dad every day of the week. No questions asked.
Your mom said you were a special boy, and you believe her.
Oh, my gosh. Pinch your cheeks. Okay, and then the next second you blink, and you're marching in a line with a bunch of other people who also had their cheeks pinched by their conservative grandmother. There's a point in real life where the joke becomes a very scary and very painful reality. And I think that happens between level 3 and level 7, where you have like, oh, you have vicious mockery and you have dissonant whispers and it's funny because you're not dumb and it's fun to make fun of the nerds. And this is all so cool and lighthearted. And then at level 7, you're actually indoctrinating other people.
Yeah.
Maybe without even realizing it. And I think that is how so many of these people find themselves in situations like this, where it starts out as a joke. It starts out so lighthearted. And eventually it becomes so real that they can't go back, or they can't find their way back on their own. Truly, like two camps of people. Like you said, the people that will ignore, right? They are very purposefully and methodically putting practices like this into place. And then the other people that are just easily manipulated. They are truly an ignorant party that is put into those lower positions as a scapegoat. And they will be crushed eventually, but the whole machine works on top of those people, right?
Yeah.
And this subclass could be both of those. It could be the ones that are intentionally causing damage, or it could very easily, with that intelligence score, be played as the person who is ignorant to the whole thing and being manipulated into becoming a 20th level paladin of stupidity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
And what I will say, just to put a pin on this, you folks who are out there listening, maybe I should save this for the anything to say to the people before we say goodbye. But I'm just gonna say this now.
Yeah.
If you're out there, if you're feeling the feelings that this is making me feel, just generally every day, you're A, not alone, and B, definitely do take your own time to experience joy and to play games like Dungeons and Dragons with your friends, and take a little moment away from everything. Gestures broadly again. I hope and trust that we'll keep seeing you out there, and that you will keep being honest about this kind of stuff when you see it, combating it, finding ways
verbal about
to
it.
Undermine it in whatever small ways you can, because all any of us can do is the small ways right now, but it all, it all adds up. Thanks for doing that and for keeping on doing what you do. And we appreciate you so much.
Mm-hmm. The other day I messaged Dan and I said that my I changed courses on my paladin, so it might not be fully realized. Sorry about that. Also, are you comfortable with things getting a little political? And his answer was, sure.
I'm always okay with things getting a little political.
A little... Let's look to the future, though.
Let's, please.
In
God, can we look towards the future?
We know what we're looking forward to. But on this podcast, next week, we already have something rolled.
Yes, that's right.
We are welcoming another guest next week. And the three of us are going to be making Eldritch Steampunk Tech, specifically for a noir horror setting. Which is so many points
noir,
of theme.
Horror, eldritch, steampunk. What
technology
is this? I love it. I love it so much. Yes, Sunfire will be here. Some of you may follow Sunfire on TikTok or other places.
Yeah.
Great, it's very great possible. Creator. Yeah. Glad to have her on.
I think all of those points of contact for that prompt can coalesce.
Yes.
Well, it's just finding the middle of the Venn diagram between those five circles, right?
The Venn diagram is Hot Topic, Michael.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're great. Then I already know exactly what I'm gonna do.
Perfect. Good. Me too. No, I'm very excited. It should be fun. Yeah.
Bangles with spikes on them, Doug.
Absolutely. Spiked bangles.
I own too many of those in my day.
Very excited. So come back next time and listen to us make some Eldritch Steampunk tech for noir horror campaigns. And if you have any other prompts in the meantime, they don't have to be quite that crazy. But they can be. Send them over to us at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com. Or you can join the Patreon at the free tier. That's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And you get all of the episodes and all of the PDF versions of the things that we create for free. If you feel like, you know, throwing us a couple bucks every month, we'd really appreciate that too. Yeah. And you get a little bonus content. You get a bonus episode a couple times a month and some cut for time stuff. And all of that good stuff. And we appreciate you. Anyway, Michael, we've already rolled for our new prompt. I feel like we've already kind of covered the things that we need to tell the people before we say goodbye, because they're just so lovely and we love them. You got anything else?
No, I think we're probably good. Great. I think we're probably good for today.
Great. Then I tell you what, folks, we'll just leave you with this. Please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We wish you all the best. Until next time.
That's it.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.